Welcome to Off Script with Dan Dwyer on Robin Hood Radio, featuring in-depth interviews with guests from the world of theater and allied arts. Underwriting support from Johnny Cake Books in Salisbury, Connecticut, whose collection of rare collectible and out-of-print books is housed in a 19th-century cottage in one of the most old-fashioned small towns in New England. And now, here's the host of Off Script, Dan Dwyer.
Thanks, Marshall, and welcome to Off Script. One of the highlights of the Broadway season is a thrilling British play called The Ferryman. It's an epic tale set in the early 1980s about a multi-generational Catholic Irish household in Northern Ireland, beset by something that happened to one of its family members by the IRA. The play starts with a dark, menacing visit by a pair of IRA hitmen on Father Horrigan, the parish priest. With me today is the British actor who plays Father Horrigan, Charles Dale, who had the part in London's West End. It's Charles' first appearance on the New York stage, and in England, besides some doing a lot of theater, he was last seen in the West End in Everyone's Talking About Jamie, and he's very well known over there for the big role of Big Mac on the hit BBC series Casualty. Welcome, Charles.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And welcome to New York.
Ah, it's great.
Yeah, no, I read someplace in some interview that you did in the past that this is your first appearance on the New York stage.
It is. Yeah. Absolutely. First time I've been to New York as well.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You're kidding.
No.
Oh, my Lord. So before we get into the theater and all that stuff, what do you think of New York?
I really like New York. I mean, I lived in London for 20 years, and actually I prefer New York.
Yeah. Really?
I just find it's such a straightforward city. I really like that about it. And it's, you know, there's so many different areas and so many nice places to go.
Yeah, New Yorkers have been described as straightforward.
Well, I'm kind of straightforward, so I quite like that.
That's great. So are you enjoying the role of Father Horrigan as much here, putting aside your new love affair with New York City? Are you enjoying it as much here as you did in London?
I've been doing this job for a very long time. I've been doing it for over 35 years, and I've done a lot of plays, and I've done a lot of plays for a very long time. And I was saying to somebody the other day that this is actually, and every actor will tell you the same thing, much as you love your job, there does come sometimes a time when you basically go, oh, God, really? I've got to do this again tonight? And it's never happened with this show. I can honestly say it's never happened with this show. I turn up quite happy and get on with my job. It's been great.
That's great. Well, I introduced the play very briefly, and besides being an amazing family story, which is full of conflict, you've got the generational conflict, the romantic conflict, the sibling rivalry. It's an amazing political thriller. And without giving too much away, can you tell us how Father Horrigan figures in the story?
Well, yes, because in the first scene it becomes very apparent what my role is going to be. I am the go-between, basically, between the family and the IRA. And they come to me for information and for various reasons, which we won't go into. I then have to help them to a certain degree.
Yeah, we can't say too much about it.
No, you can't get too much away.
You know, I've seen the play twice. Yeah. I've seen it, to be perfectly honest, I haven't seen the New York version because it is the same production as in England. But I did see it at the Royal Court where it started out.
Yeah.
And then I saw it at the West End. And what really impressed me about it is it has all different kinds of conflict, the family conflict, the religious conflict, the political conflict, all of that. It weaves in these incredible sensitivities about Irish life. But all of the conflicts, it gets amazingly resolved in one shocking 30-second ending where it all comes together. And I've never seen a play like that.
I don't think they're probably – well, I mean,
maybe Shakespeare,
there is.
Maybe there might be.
But it's certainly not common, shall we say.
No,
I mean, hopefully, you know, as all actors, we do the best job we can do. But I do genuinely believe that this is one of the as near a bulletproof play as you're going to get.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's a phenomenal piece of writing. I think Jez has done an incredible job because it works on so many levels. There are so many different stories on so many levels.
Right. You mentioned Jez Butterworth is the author of it. He's probably best known now for The Ferryman, but before that, at least in New York, he had a very successful run here of Jerusalem, which is a fabulous play. Now, the odd thing about it is that Butterworth is British, and he's really writing in some ways, and I don't say this in any way to disparage the verisimilitude of his writing, But he's in some ways doing an homage to all of these guys who are Irish, who are really writing Irish plays.
He is indeed. I mean, obviously, a lot of it comes from Laura's personal story. Obviously, Laura, who plays Caitlin,
well, back up for this a little bit, because a lot of American audiences don't know the real, origin for this play in Butterworth's mind. Experience, rather.
Basically, Jez and Laura were watching a documentary about the disappeared, who were the people that were kidnapped by the IRA and taken away. And rather than just killing them, they took them away and they disappeared them. They killed them, they buried them in bogs. But they let the families think that these people were still around. They reported sightings of these people in the UK and various other places. And so in some ways it obviously made it a lot worse, because you lived with this vague hope that one day these people might come back. And Laura and Jez were watching a documentary. They got all the way
through. Excuse me, Laura is Jez's
partner. Also plays Caitlin.
Right.
And has done since the very beginning.
Okay, so Caitlin is the wife. Caitlin is the sister-in-law of Quinn.
Who is the patriarch of the family.
Okay. So we've got someone who disappeared.
Yeah.
We've got Caitlin, who's living in the farmhouse.
The man who's disappeared is her husband.
Is her husband, and she's living in this large extended family on a farmhouse in Northern Ireland, and the head of that household is her brother-in-law.
That's correct.
Who's a very attractive guy.
Yeah, real alpha male.
Right.
But they were watching the documentary, and you got to the end of the documentary, and as the list of names of the disappeared was going through, Laura said, "That's my uncle."
Wow.
And Laura's uncle was disappeared and wasn't found for many years. And that's where it originated.
And so then he said, how long did it take Butterworth to write this?
I'm not 100% sure, but a long time.
Yeah, no, because it's really, really intricate. It's a very unique play, or distinguished play, distinctive play, for many reasons, which you've mentioned. The other reason is that it's such a large cast.
Mm.
It's a huge cast. How many people in the cast? Including the baby.
22 or 23 of us.
Does that include the 3-month-old baby on the stage?
3-month-old baby, the goose, the rabbit, the understudy goose.
Having done a lot of theater in London or in England, where the rules are different than in New York, you may be accustomed to large casts, but it's almost become de rigueur now, particularly in contemporary plays, for playwrights to write 4 or 5 character plays. A two-hander would be nice, and if you've got a producer, if you could give me a play with no characters, that's even better, right? Because it costs nothing to produce.
Yeah.
So is it new for you to be on stage with so many people, or have you become inured because you're English and working with large casts in face of the current trend where it's smaller casts just by dint of economy?
Yes, I mean, I think I've done pretty much everything. I'm trying to cast my mind back to the plays. I mean, I have spent 8.5 years doing nothing but TV. Right. So previous to last year, where I came out and started doing Jamie. But I was doing four-handers. I was also I worked for many years for a company called the English Shakespeare Company, who toured all over the States, Chicago, funnily enough, Stanford, all over Canada, Japan, all over Europe, and we were a cast of 30. So it still varies.
Right. In case you're just joining us, the program's off script. I'm your host, Dan Dwyer, and my guest today is Charles Dale. He's playing Father Horrigan in the British award-winning play The Ferryman, which is now on Broadway. And we're talking about Charles' work on British stage and also British TV. In Britain, there seems to be, to us Americans, that there's always been a tradition of actors going smoothly from the stage into television and back and forth. And it doesn't seem, until the advent of all the cable series now in the United States, that's become a way of life for American actors, too. I mean, American actors used to get more pigeonholed and just do stage or just do movies. Now they seem to go back and forth from television and stage a lot. Is this the way you're trained over there to do this as a matter of course?
Well, I think to a certain degree in America, the reason why a lot of film stars have gone to television is the improvement in American television. You know, I mean, the extraordinary TV shows that come out of America now, I mean, going back for me to the sort of Sopranos era where all the HBO stuff started coming out, and the quality was just phenomenal. Right. Well, if you're a big movie star and you suddenly see that TV is that good, perhaps that's one of the reasons you're going to start doing it. I mean, I started in theatre like everybody does, you know. I mean, I think a lot more of the younger generation of actors in the UK start in TV now.
Do they?
Yeah, I think there's a lot less of the
tradition. So the model of coming out of Shakespeare and doing all the regional theatre is not as...
The rep is certainly not as prevalent as it used to be.
Right.
So, no. Yeah, a lot more young actors start. And I think, I mean, for me, there's no difference. There's never been any difference. My intentions have always been the same. What's going on in my head is always the same. One of them is just a bit louder.
Which one?
It depends what I'm playing. Generally theatre. But, you know, but I mean, we actually use mics here, which I've never used for a stage play. I've used it for a musical, but I've never used mics. And that actually, at first people were going, oh, I don't need a mic, I don't this. But actually, it's very useful because it allows you to take things down to a certain level where it becomes perhaps more personal.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because this brings up a line of questioning that I had in mind. Are you saying that you didn't use mics
in the West End
at all?
No.
Which theater was it at? I forgot.
The Gielgud.
But the acoustics are fabulous in those places anyway. But you are using mics here.
Yes.
Is that the producer's desire to make it easier for the American audiences to understand?
I think it's partly to do with the design of the theater.
Uh-huh.
The theater here is a lot wider.
Yeah.
It's shallower, but it's wider.
Which one are you in now?
We're in the Bernard B. Jacobs.
Right, right.
And I think it's basically because of that.
Right.
It's a lot wider. You have to stretch it from left to right far more than you do reaching backwards.
Does it get in the way at all? Do you forget it?
Personally, after about 5 minutes, no.
No.
No,
okay.
Not at all.
So you're not encumbered by it?
No, they're so small.
Yeah, they are.
They're so
okay.
small now.
But talking about the scale of the theater and how it's mic'd here, and some of the sound design systems are now quite good, so you're not aware of it. But on the transfer from the West End to Broadway, has any of the delivery of the dialogue changed? Because when I first saw it at the Royal Court where it started out, and then at the West End, it took me a while to get used to the dialects. Hmm. And I wonder if when the transfer is made from London to New York, do you slow it down a little bit? Do you shave off some of the dialect a little bit so that American audiences can pick up on the rhythm of the speech more?
It's very marginal.
There's a tiny little bit
in the prologue, because there is a lot of exposition in the prologue. So, you know, it's very necessary that the audience understand that. But as a friend of mine who lives here, Jackie, she's a journalist, she lives on 45th, and she said to me, there's more Irish here than there is in London. So you're more likely to be understood here than you are in London.
I'm one of the 45, probably up to now 50 million people who claim to be Irish American.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's the largest Irish American population in the world.
You know, in that respect, there's probably more people understand it here than would do in London.
So when you look out at the audience, Manra, if you can see the audience.
I never see them.
You can't. You with the lights
I
and
never.
All of that kind of stuff.
No, some people do. I just don't. I don't know why.
Part of the reason, I'm just yakking now, but part of the reason of the play, besides it being so good, it might be popular because of us. It just occurred to me because there are so many Irish in the New York metropolitan area.
It's quite possible.
Yeah.
It's quite possible.
Now, you are not Irish.
I'm not.
You are by birth.
I'm a Welshman.
Aha. So, to the American ear, okay, you sound... to me, rather Irish, but what do I know? Okay,
well,
I'm just an American.
I've been doing the accent for nearly a year.
No, but
every night.
But you don't stay in it in everyday speak,
no.
Do you?
No.
Okay. In the course of your career, how many dialects have you done that are just unique to the British Isles? Are the Welsh accents or Irish accents or dialects?
Well, I sort of specialize in dialects and always have done. So I used to do a lot of voiceovers and things like that. And I used to be what was known as a utility player.
Okay.
So if there was a commercial that needed to be on 15 different radio stations in 15 different regions, then they would get me in, and I would do the same commercial 15 times in 15 different dialects.
So you could regionalize your accent that specifically?
Yeah. I mean, I did a show which is very big in the UK called Coronation Street, which has run for over 50 years, which was a soap. Now, the character there was from Manchester. So obviously I did a Manchester accent for there. Big Mac was a Welshman. Father Horrigan's an Irishman. But, you know, that's my job. That's what makes my job interesting.
How'd you get into that?
My father was good at it. My mother was good at it.
Are they actors?
They're not actors.
No.
I think if they'd been given the chances that they gave me,
right,
they would have been very good actors.
Right.
They just went in different directions. And I work at it. I practice. I sit in the bath and I will read a paragraph in one dialect and I will read a paragraph in another dialect.
But where do you get the sound of the dialect?
I tend to be people rather than accents. So if I'm doing my Irish accent, if I'm doing my Belfast accent, that's three people that I know. One is James Nesbitt, the actor, who I used to play football with. One is an actor called Charles Lawson, who's another actor. And one is a celebrity booker who's a friend of mine called Miles. So I find it easier if you're being the person instead of actually being an accent.
An accent. So we're hearing Belfast
That's a Belfast
We're having accent. Hearing yeah. Belfast people now.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to put you on the spot, but like all Irish Americans, I've made some pilgrimage back to my mother earth, so we all end up in you know, Cork or County Kerry.
County Cork. Now, that's a whole different place altogether now. No, but that's a marvellous mad place, so it is. That's a whole, you know, that's all of a sudden you'll get the siblings in there and the teas and all that kind of stuff. And then you'll go gentler and you'll go for a Wexford accent or something like that, which has more of that kind of, the softer slightly, not quite so hard.
Okay.
So you'll have that sort of thing going on then. And then the Dublin, where you get that kind of thing going on there, which is all that slight nasality of the Dublin accent.
So you've taken us from north to south to west to east now, or across the Irish Isle.
Yeah.
All right, this is a shout-out to my – humor me while you're doing this. This is a shout-out to my dear friend Marion Morris, who had an American Mayflower mother and an Irish father. And after she – and I hope you're listening, Marion, or you will be – after she had done her American bit, she said, I'm going back to the mother turf. And she settled in, and I hope I'm going to pronounce this right, and you're going to correct me if I get it wrong. Tarlis.
Tarlis? Oh, I don't know. I don't know Tarlis.
It's right in the middle of Tipperary.
Oh, right.
Okay. Is that how you said it?
No. Tipperary, yeah.
Yeah, she's right in the middle of Tipperary.
Yeah.
Now, what's that sound? It's not a T and it's not an H, but it's sort of like a click
like
off.
The drum.
Yeah.
Like the drum, like Tipperary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's Tarlis.
Tarlis. So it's like water.
There you go.
You hear water
there
or butter.
Go. Okay.
Whereas in the north, it's a butter. It's a hard D. It's like a butter, water.
Okay. So here's the next question. Do you think, because you're a pro at this, it's easier for British actors, and I say British, Welsh, or Irish, all that, British actors to do American accents than American to do British?
I would think that the American accent is a simpler accent to do.
For Brits.
Yeah. For anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, it's like, say, Matthew McConaughey doing a Tennessee accent. That's something. I think there's elements in the American accents and the variation of American accents that are actually simpler. The British accent is famously badly done because it's underestimated how difficult it is. You know, that's the problem. And it's all about the lengthening of vowel sounds, and that's where you get, "Cool, blimey, strike a light, Mary Poppins," you know, and you get all that kind of stuff because it's underestimated how difficult it is. So I think, actually, not for British actors it's easier to do American accents. I think the American accent itself is easier to do as an accent than the British accent.
Okay, so the question now is, are British actors better trained to do accents in general than American actors?
It depends where they come from. Yeah. If you go to drama school, or if you go to Yale, or if you go to Harvard, or if you go to NYC, or whatever, you're going to get classes. So I wouldn't say they're better trained. I think perhaps the British, and I don't know whether it's a class thing, are more aware of dialect. Whereas in my experience dealing with Americans, they're not quite so aware of accent amongst themselves.
Well, a lot of them are disappearing. Yeah. A lot of the because of television and all of that. I mean, with, you know, a lot of regional accents are disappearing. If I used to drink, as I still did, and I really had an animated conversation with you, you'd probably hear my Boston accent come out. But I
park the car,
all that. You know, and don't get me started. You know, it's one of those expressions. But
that's a tough if we Boston's if, tough.
Well, that's it. What makes a Boston accent hard? Because I've seen there's a lot of Boston movies that have been made by Scorsese and Ben Affleck and that whole crowd that plumb mostly the underworld, but also the blue collar that populate around the Boston areas. Now, having grown up in a place called New Bedford, Massachusetts, and to be accurate, it would be New Bedford, okay?
How do they say water?
Water. I can tell the difference between a Boston accent, a Dedham accent, a New Bedford accent, and all these places.
Of course.
But even American actors have really hard times in doing a Boston accent. What makes it so hard?
Again,
not hard, hard.
I think there's certain accents that are specifically difficult. It's like, for example, people have terrible problems with Welsh accents because the intonations of a Welsh accent are not very far from an Indian accent. So basically, if you're talking like that, right, the proper Valleys Welsh accent, you know, sort of Tony Hopkins kind of thing, you know, where you're getting like that and various, although he's a very posh version of it, obviously, but you start talking like that, but the intonations are like that. So if you start taking it too far, all of a sudden you're going to somewhere completely different, and you all of a sudden you have an Indian accent, you know. So I think specific accents are very difficult. Where I live, there's a Cardiff accent because I live in the capital of Wales. Which is a Cardiff accent, which is a Dockyard accent, where they talk like that. How are you, love? Nice to see you. Where were you going on? All right. Now, that's a very hard accent if you're not used to it. But I live there now.
That's a Cardiff accent.
That's a Cardiff accent.
Cardiff.
But the Cardiff accent is similar to the Belfast accent. It's similar to the Glasgow accent. It's similar to the Newcastle accent because all the dockers travelled from dock to dock. So you get your Geordie accent with a talk like that, and how are you going on, man, and all that sort of stuff.
We're having a fascinating conversation here. I'm talking with Charles Dale. We're supposed to be talking about The Ferryman, which is the Broadway play he's in playing Father Horrigan. But we've ended up having this fascinating conversation on accents and dialects, and I think we've got about 10 minutes left. So let's continue on with this because I'm fascinated by it.
Okay.
So when you're doing a dialect. Let's get back to Father Horrigan because we're talking about we're talking about the ferryman. He's from Northern. He's obviously a Catholic. He's in Northern Ireland, right?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, you have a certain leeway with Horrigan because he's from that area. He's from Armagh. Now, an Armagh accent is different again. But then he would have gone to seminary, so he would have spent more time. I mean, there are very few pure accents now. That is the good thing for actors because you can kind of not generalize, but you can do an accent and enough people will kind of go, yeah, I'll buy that. As long as 80% of the people who are listening are saying, yeah, I believe that. And you're not breaking the fourth wall by the accent being that bad that people are going, that's a terrible accent. Because the minute you do that, you lose the character.
Right. But you've sort of answered the question because what I was going to ask was, apropos of your point, that you're not doing an accent, you're doing a character.
A person. Yeah.
Okay. When you're doing a person, in the way you're that person that you happen to be playing is speaking, you're creating a backstory that's revealing to you what kind of education they had, what class they might have come from, and all of that.
Well, of course, but I mean, there's all sorts of accents. I mean, I can talk to you like that. I can do the full-on Glasgow, right? Have mine, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
All right. But if you meet someone who's rather nice and lives in Glasgow, they're going to talk in a completely different way.
And how would they say it?
Well, it'd be like that. It'd be much gentler, you know, much milder. It's almost like heading towards Edinburgh. Mm-hmm. But it's that kind of thing. So it's a much gentler thing altogether. So everything comes into it, you know. I mean, I use catchphrases. I always have catchphrases, especially for accents that I have difficulty with. Now, for many years, there's a washing powder back in the UK called Persil Automatic. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I said to the And I said to the youngsters coming in, the understudies coming into the show, I said, if you're ever losing it, all you have to say to yourself in your head is Persil Automatic. And if you say
what?
Say Persil Automatic.
Persil Automatic.
Persil Automatic. That's what you could say.
Persil Automatic.
Persil Automatic.
Persil Automatic.
Perfect Belfast accent. And there you go. All you have to do is say Persil Automatic. And like my auntie Pat, who was Irish, she was from the Republic, she would say knickerses. instead of knickers. I can't. You can't have too many pairs of old knickerses.
Knickerses.
Now, so I used to, in my head, I used to say knickerses. If I was losing it, I would say knickerses. And knickerses would always remind me, because it's got the vowel sounds. It's got all. There's a brilliant sentence, which is, sure, who would here and now know aught of the new art, must fight, toil, care, learn, and then take his ease.
Where's
and
that from?
That's just, it's just a piece of, it's just a sentence that was made up by somebody, because it has all the vowel sounds and diphthongs that you'll ever need in language.
Can you do it again for us, please?
Sure, who would here and now know aught of the new art, must fight, toil, care, learn, and then take his ease.
Well, it's a little more complicated than the rain in Spain.
It is a little more. But if you get somebody from Belfast to say that for you, and you record it, and they go, sure, who would here and now know aught of the new art, must fight, toil, care, learn, and then take his ease, you will get every single vowel sound that you're ever going to need. So you can literally use it as a pamphlet to decipher your script.
I have a sense you're a very modest guy, but I'm going to ask you a wise-ass question anyway. When you're in rehearsal and they bring in a dialect coach, do you ever go, oh, for God's sake, this is how it's really done?
I try not, and as I've got...
But you could.
I have actually worked as a dialect coach on shows.
Right.
So I prefer, especially if I'm doing a telly, if I'm doing a TV and I'm playing a character that's from somewhere, I'll probably disappear there for 2 weeks before I start.
Good.
Because I like the reality.
Right.
And also, if you're generally, no matter how good a voice coach is, and there are brilliant voice coaches out there and dialect coaches, no matter how good they are, unless they're from that area, they're only giving you an interpretation of what they hear.
Right.
Now, they may be brilliant and they may be absolutely spot on, but for my ear, I would much rather go and meet a docker in a boozer who's come from Grimsby if I have to do a Grimsby accent.
Right.
And record stuff and listen to him. But again, you don't always get the time. Right.
So in the case of Ferryman, you were your own dialect coach.
To a certain degree, we had a very good dialect coach on the show and have a very good Debs, who's a very good dialect coach here, who's working with a new American cast, who are doing a brilliant job.
What percentage of the cast? It's mostly a British cast, is it not, or no?
It is now, but when the new cast comes in, it'll be 90% American.
I see. So you were getting back to the London cast of Ferryman. You were the second cast in the West End, is that?
That's right, yeah.
Right. Okay, so you did that for, what, 300-400 performances over there or something like that?
Something like that.
And then came here, and you're part of the original Broadway cast, which is mostly from
Brits.
The British cast. Yeah. How many of you did it on the West End, like yourself?
Well, everybody.
Oh, good.
Everybody, some good. Say. The only exception being Fanula, who joined us.
In which character is that?
Who plays Aunt Maggie, who was obviously...
Oh, the one of the wheelchair?
Who was born in Ireland, but came here in 1967.
That's a wonderful soliloquy when she talks about the banshees coming across the moors.
Yeah,
that's really...
Yeah.
That's really...
She's pretty amazing.
That's really kind of special.
Yeah.
That's really kind of good. Okay, let's go a little bit now into something different. I inquired about this play that you were in briefly in London called Everybody's Talking to Jamie, and it's about this young man who's sort of a misfit because he likes to do drag in high school. Is that right?
That's correct.
And you appear in drag in it.
I do. I played a character called Hugo, who was his mentor, who was an ex-drag queen who was a bit of a failure but runs the local...
But you look like a bear.
Well, there's a lot of berry drag queens out there.
Some of them are frightful, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, I said at one point, because I had a beard, I'd just come off a TV job, and I had a beard, and I said, I'd really quite like to keep the beard, because I knew this guy who was a drag queen, had this big black beard, and did the whole rest of it. And they were like, no, we want you to lose the beard. So I lost the beard and did my Marilyn thing in my pink dress.
From Gentlemen Prefer Blondes?
Yeah.
Is that what you were supposed to be?
Oh, my,
that's scary. I've seen a picture of that. That's really scary. You know what? I would love to continue this conversation, but we're at the end of the program.
It's been a pleasure.
We've talked about everything from doing drag on the West End in a play called Everybody's Talking About Jamie to a lot of great dialect points about British and American actors, and we've got this charming guy here called Charles Dale, who's playing Father Horrigan in The Ferryman. I'm sure you do as great a job on stage as you do with an interview, and I appreciate you coming on Off Script.
Absolute pleasure.
And thank you, Charles Dale, again. Thank you, everybody, for listening to us. Until the next time you listen in as a dear, departed friend of mine used to say, be well.
underwriting support for Off Script with Dan Dwyer from Johnny Cake Books in Salisbury, Connecticut, whose collection of rare collectible and out-of-print books is housed in a 19th century cottage in one of the most old-fashioned small towns in New England. Off Script with Dan Dwyer is also available via podcast on our on-demand page, robinhoodradio.com. Click on On Demand and then click on Off Script with Dan Dwyer.